6'6" above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation.
And good afternoon. Welcome to this, the Thursday edition of A Public Affair. I'm your host for this hour. My name is Alan Ruff. With me in the studios is Ruth Conniff, who's become somewhat of a regular on this program, and it's good to see you again today, Ruth.
Good to be here.
Ruth Conniff is the political editor of the Progressive Magazine, a native of Madison, a graduate of West High School.
East High School.
East High School.
Please.
East High School.
East.
I thought you were a Westie.
God, my
you
God.
You really strike me.
Could be the most serious piece of slander ever.
You strike me as being a Westie. I don't know why.
I'm an Eastsider.
I'm sorry. I retract. A graduate of East High.
Thank you.
A native of Madison, Wisconsin. Of course, she first joined the magazine when she was hired as a summer intern by the late Irwin Knoll during her sophomore year in college. And she's been with the Progressive since the 90s. Shortly after graduating from college in 1990, she came to work as associate editor for the Progressive and then its Washington editor. And she opened the Progressive's Washington, D.C. office in 97. During the 90s, Ruth Conniff covered welfare reform in Wisconsin and around the country, as well as the drug war in Colombia and other topics, including women's sports. Some of you may have seen her on some of the TV talk shows on CNN, Fox News, Ruth Conniff, Fox News, and PBS. She still appears on occasion on PBS's To the Contrary and on the Ed Schultz Show on MSNBC. The Ed Schultz Show. I don't know.
Ruth, welcome.
You know, let's take. You know, we got off on a lighter note, but we're actually kind of going to be discussing a serious topic today, and that is the increasing privatization of public education. The offensive that's going on at a national and statewide level. You know, it's interesting, Ruth, that as you mentioned at the beginning of one of the articles you did recently, that most of the debate around public schools, public education, and so on, seems to be pitched at a local level.
Mm-hmm.
But that in reality, there's a much broader, again, I already mentioned this, broader offensive, this initiative being carried out by conservative forces to basically dismantle public schools.
Right.
Let's start there. Let's talk about the that offensive. What are some of the, you talk about the big forces currently at work to change our schools?
Well, I think, you know, the point that I was making about the, you know, obviously public schools are local entities. They are supervised by local school boards. They're funded by local taxpayers, which is one of the reasons you see so much inequity in school funding from district to district. It's, you know, the property tax. So people are very intensely locally tied to their school, and these issues are fought out on a local level, at the school board level. You know, people get really worked up about whether their kid's school is serving their kids or whether their neighbors are leaving that school to go to a different school. But behind all of this, I think what is not well known to folks who are really captured by this very local issue of their schools is that there is a big network of right-wing funders who have as their goal, and it's part of a larger goal of privatization generally, and the idea of the free market being the answer to everything, they have as their goal just draining tax dollars out of public schools. And we see this in Wisconsin, where we're really ground zero of privatization as a policy matter, with the voucher plan, which started in Milwaukee, is the first in the nation, private school voucher. So for the first time, taxpayers are giving money to kids so that those kids can attend private schools. And from the beginning, this is argued as it was argued that this was important as a way of helping kids who were in failing schools. They were poor kids. They were largely African American. At least that was the intent of the program in Milwaukee. And they would be allowed to do something like go to a Catholic school that might serve them better. And, you know, the church state issue has been fought out in court here in Wisconsin. And in fact, religious schools can take this public money. It's what's going on currently. But I think there are a few things that have happened in Wisconsin to really make people realize that this is not just about instituting a program in a single city to try to do a stopgap measure where schools are not serving people well. It's more than just helping out some poor kids. For one thing, the income cap has been lifted on vouchers. So Scott Walker now is allowing people who make not just poverty wages, but 300% of poverty, which is more than half of people who live in Wisconsin are at this income level. So the eligibility has been vastly expanded. He's also moving the voucher program into 9 new school districts in his current budget. So it's being expanded around the state and very controversial in the districts where the vouchers are being proposed, because people recognize that what this is going to do is take money from public schools and give it to parents so they can send their kids to private school. And in fact, in Racine, when the voucher program was expanded from Milwaukee to Racine, more than half of the people who received this voucher money had never attended public school. So this is just a direct subsidy from taxpayers to private school families. One of the things I mentioned in an article I wrote for Isthmus about it is that a friend of mine who sends her children to Catholic school got a notice from that school saying, "We're really excited about the prospect of expanding vouchers to Madison, Wisconsin, because what it's going to mean is for all of these families who've always sent their kids to Catholic school, they're going to get a free subsidy on their tuition from the taxpayers in their school district." Of course, this happens. Now we're back to the local issue. This happens at a time where people are keenly aware on the local level that strings is being cut. Your kid can't take violin in fourth grade anymore. Pretty soon, not in fifth grade either, it looks like, possibly. That art teachers are being cut. That, you know, the school buildings themselves, we're not able to maintain the physical plant so well. The budget cuts, and the historic budget cuts, never before in state history have we seen a $1 billion budget cut before Walker's last budget, are going to be maintained in the current budget. There will be $0 per pupil increase in districts across the state. And at the same time, there's going to be this really intense drain on public school resources that go into private schools. Now, I know you asked about the funders, Alan. Sure. I'm sorry, I didn't address that right away. But this is a plan that has been made and coordinated by groups like the American Federation for Children, which is based in Michigan. It was founded by the DeVos family of the Amway fortune. And Betsy DeVos, whose brother, by the way, runs Blackwater, Eric Prince, is an interesting fact, has put a lot of money over time into promoting things like the Milwaukee Voucher Program all across our country. And Wisconsin is really an epicenter of American Federation for Children funding.
Why is that? Why is Wisconsin this epicenter?
Because Wisconsin has turned out to be a friendly policy environment for this for some reason, in spite of the fact that we have excellent public schools, that our public schools are not quote unquote failing. In fact, they're some of the best public schools with the highest qualified teachers, the highest graduation rates, the highest standardized test scores in the country.
Yep.
We are willing to run these experiments. We have something called the Bradley Foundation, as you well know, based in Milwaukee, which is, in fact, although people are not necessarily aware of this, a larger funder of right-wing causes nationally than the Koch brothers. They have put a lot of money behind this drive in Milwaukee because Tommy Thompson was willing to get together with an African-American Democratic legislator, Polly Williams, back in the 1980s to put together this voucher plan in Milwaukee, and got gonzo support from right-wing foundations like Bradley and AFC. They have been able to launch their project here in Wisconsin. They now have a really friendly legislature and governor here in Wisconsin to expand on that launch, that little test case in Milwaukee. And they are looking to take it statewide at the same time that this is going on nationwide. So a little window into the right-wing funding behind this that kind of, you know how ALEC was something that nobody had ever heard of, and then with Walker, now people have heard of ALEC. Or the Koch brothers. Nobody had ever heard of the Koch brothers before things really got going in Wisconsin and we realized what it meant that Scott Walker was a friend of David Koch. I think something similar is happening with school privatization. And a little window on that was a piece in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel where Dan Bice, who's a great Journal Sentinel investigative reporter, uncovered a piece of literature that was intended only for the right-wing donors and members of the American Federation for Children, this Michigan-based group. And it explained that they had given money to 9 states around the nation to support school privatization. The top recipient of their money was Wisconsin. In fact, they had poured more than $2 million into legislative races here in Wisconsin in order to elect school privatization-friendly legislators. Like, for example, Rick Gudex, who beat Jessica King and has pledged never to vote for any budget that doesn't expand vouchers around the state. So they poured $2 million. Well, what's interesting about that is they reported to public officials in Wisconsin, to the GAB, the elections board, where they have to file their political spending, that they had only spent $345,000 in Wisconsin. It's a big gap between that and the $2 million they told their donors they spent.
Right. This report that was that Bice did this, uncovered this internal report, this 2012 election impact report. I was reading a little bit about it in prep for this program. And it's interesting that the American Federation for Children is funding other things other than actually a wide afield from education, these electoral campaigns, pumped money into to fighting the recall effort against Walker and so on.
Yeah, they make it very clear to their members that in order to have quote-unquote school reform, we have got to fund elections. We've got to get people elected. Who are the people that this benign-sounding group, American Federation for Children, funds because they care deeply about children's futures and the reform of education? They are Scott Walker. They are the right-wing Republican members of our legislature and other legislatures around the country. If you look at who the recipients are of their funds, these are not people who have built their careers on public interest work helping out children. These are the same people who are, you know, basically dismantling civil society and helping their corporate friends. So this drive, it's an ideological drive. It's a free market drive. But there's also money to be made in it. And some of the people who are profiting from this here in Wisconsin, some of the direct recipients obviously are the religious schools. And there, you know, there are many letters, not just my friend who got that letter from her personal, you know, the administration of her Catholic school, but also the Archdiocese of Green Bay has sent out a letter saying, you know, we're really looking at this voucher expansion as a major source of funds for us. Religious school enrollment has been declining in Wisconsin, so the Lutheran and Catholic schools are excited. Taxpayers are going to be giving them money now. And then there are corporations like K-12 Education, which is an online education entity around the country. They run online education. They get money in order to do that. Local laws, statewide laws that allow them to get public money to do that mean a much more profitable business model for them. And that is why they drafted the legislation that came up and is coming up again here in Wisconsin that expands the ability of online education companies to receive public funds. So there is a financial interest, and then there's just an ideological affinity. And you know, the problem, Alan, I think for those of us who care about public education, want to defend it, is that, you know, you see little parent groups springing up around the country to try to defend their local school. You see this consciousness on a very local level. Gee, you know, we want to save our school. But what we don't have is this incredibly slick, well-financed network that's willing to just throw money at this issue because ideologically they support it. And that's where you have the Bradley, and that's where you have the American Federation for Children coming in.
You're listening to Ruth Conniff, political editor of the Progressive magazine. We'll be opening up the phone lines in a bit, 256-2001, with questions or comments. Let's continue on with this American Federation for Children. Ruth Conniff, you talked about how it brands itself as the nation's voice for educational choice, but you also allude to the fact of its kind of slick manipulation of children of color in its brochures, its advertisement, that the money's going to white rich folks, but they showcase kids of color. Talk about that, the racism of that.
Well, you know, school choice, as they have chosen to label their movement, it's a friendly sounding label, has been a very racially divisive issue from the very beginning. Because in Milwaukee, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the first in the nation voucher program started by Tommy Thompson and Polly Williams, who is an African-American legislator from Milwaukee, was aimed at helping African-American kids who were living in poverty get a better education. That was the idea. And there were a lot of parents who came out and said, yeah, we don't want to wait for you to improve the schools generally. We don't want to wait for a funding formula that's going to equalize school funding so that our school is going to get what the other schools get. We want a quick answer for our kid because this is an issue of racial justice. Well, that language has been used by the national school privatization movement very effectively to divide guide people. And I think that's one of the reasons that it's so important to understand that this is not a local issue. This is a national movement. And if you look at who's behind this national push for school privatization, it is not civil rights groups. It is not the NAACP.
Right.
It is not groups that traditionally have defended racial and socioeconomic justice. In fact, the money that's being spent on politicians that will promote these policies is being spent on the same folks who want voter ID in Wisconsin. It's the same folks who really are seeking to disenfranchise African-American voters. So I think that's a point that's hard to make when you're talking to folks who are galvanized on the local level to say, you know what, things are not working well for African-American kids. And here in Madison, we have a real problem with the achievement gap. I mean, there is no doubt that our local schools here in Madison, Wisconsin, have not adequately served the needs of kids of color. And something's got to be done about it. And so you get this very controversial fight over Madison Prep, where you have people saying, you know what, you're not doing it. We're going to do it faster. We're going to do it better. And we're tired of not being respected. And there is plenty of legitimate conversation to be had about that issue. But so I think sometimes you sound like you're talking about, you know, aliens in outer space when you start bringing up national school privatization groups in that context. But the truth is, this larger attack on public education is going to be an attack on educational opportunity for kids who don't have as much opportunity, because the money that you can get to get a school voucher is not adequate to pay for you to send your kid to Country Day in Madison. It's $7,000. It's a little less than $7,000. So it's a nice tuition tax break for people like this friend of mine I mentioned. It's great. Public money's going to come in, help her family that never went to public school, keep on going to private school. Great. You know, that's just an injustice, right? That's ridiculous. And furthermore, you know, when you look at how is this serving African-American kids who've taken advantage of the Milwaukee voucher program, which has been in effect now since 1990, well, guess what? They're not performing as well as their public school peers on reading and math tests. So it has not turned out to be this ticket out. But that language is very intense. The Koch brothers financed Americans for Prosperity bus tour through Wisconsin pointed to this as an issue of racial justice. They always put a black face out front. They put Juan Williams, my former colleague from Fox News, out front on this bus tour to say, you know, white people want to keep black people from getting a good education. And if they didn't, they would privatize public education and we'd all get vouchers and just go, you know, pay as you go, get the education that you can pay for, take the tax dollars and go where you want to go. Well, you don't have to take that many steps down the road to see how that ends up not being an advantage to families that can't finance with a small boost from a voucher their kids' excellent education. We're better off having an excellent public education system. But it takes a while to say all that, you know, and I think that public consciousness needs to increase about what the forces are behind this and what is really driving this and what the best solutions really are.
Talk about School Choice Wisconsin, this statewide organization, and who's doing that, who's behind that?
Well, School Choice Wisconsin is now one of the biggest lobby groups in our state, and they put money into Republican politicians' statewide campaigns for office. So we have two former assembly speakers from our state assembly, Republicans, who have left their jobs in the assembly to become full-time lobbyists for School Choice Wisconsin, which tells you something about the power of the group.
And they are?
There are three former assembly speakers. One works for AFC, that's Scott Jensen. And then Fitzgerald now works for School Choice Wisconsin, and John Gard. Jeff Fitzgerald and John Gard both work for School Choice Wisconsin. So, I mean, this is not a rinky-dink group. This is not a small public interest outfit, you know. This is a high-powered, very well-financed group, and they're going to the offices of state legislators right now because this month the budget is coming up, the education component of Walker's budget is coming up, and they are trying to make sure that Republicans hold the line on the voucher expansion and the other elements of this budget that privatize education.
Let's talk about some of the nuts and bolts of that Walker's budget in regard to schools, to vouchers. Interestingly, of course, it's another one of these things where a seemingly fiscal or non-economic issue gets placed in the budget, this whole thing about voucher expansion as part of the budget rather than voucher expansion as going through the legislative process.
Yeah, and that's the fight right now. I mean, the people who want to defend public education in Wisconsin, the push from the local school boards, you know, there's a letter writing campaign and a resolution campaign at the school board level across the state. What they want is to take the vouchers out of the budget, because if you did a straight up or down vote, you would flip a lot of Republicans who actually know that their constituents hate this, because particularly if they're in rural areas and they already have low enrollment, this voucher expansion could kill off their local school. And that is a very hot issue locally. And again, getting back to the local politics. So taking vouchers out of the budget is really the push that that people who are trying to defend public education in Wisconsin are making right now.
Part of it also has to do this whole budget process. There's this kind of parts of it that aimed at defunding public schools, giving more money to these private ventures. But there's also this, something I've been interested in quite a bit, is this charter school authorizing board. Talk to our listeners about that a little bit. What is this charter authorizing board?
This is the rebirth of an idea from the last Walker term, or actually the pre-recall Walker term. let's hope it's just one term. Which was to create a statewide, basically, it's like a statewide charter school district, although it's an authorizing board. So what it does is it takes control out of creating charter schools away from local school boards, and it gives it to this statewide authorizing board. So there's no input and there's no oversight from school boards. Charter schools are supposed to be public schools. They're supposed to be supervised, chartered by local school districts in order to do alternative educational models that might work. They might be really good for kids who don't thrive in a traditional school setting. And then the local schools are supposed to be able to look at this model and copy it. Well, there's a different kind of charter that has really become similar to a voucher school in the sense that it's a private entity and there's no oversight and supervision or accountability from the school board. And that's what this statewide charter authorizing school entity does. It takes control away from localities. And it just says we can plop a charter school and take public money out of your district without consulting anybody locally.
It also aims at basically bypassing the State Department of Public Instruction, which is a constitutional body.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it completely undoes accountability and supervision by elected officials over the schools, but it still takes the public money.
You know, on another level, I've been looking at global World Bank driven education reform policy, and there's a marvelous guy out of Toronto who, interestingly, is an accountant by calling, a radical accountant, and he's done some articles on World Bank education reform policy, and talks about how all the language that's moved into common discourse, such as best practices and accountability and transparency and so on. He says they all have their origins in accounting.
Huh, that's interesting.
In bookkeeping. Uh-huh. And that accountability has this notion of responsibility to a public or whatever. But no, he says accountability is something else entirely when you're talking to accountants.
Mm-hmm.
Bean pushers and people handling money. It's accountancy. 256-2001. Again, you're listening to Ruth Conniff, political editor of the Progressive magazine. Nigel tells me we have a caller waiting to come on. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hello.
Please. Yes?
Yeah, hi.
Go ahead.
I think what's missing from the discussion is, hello?
Yeah, you're on.
Okay, good. I think what's missing from the discussion is why, if it's not for, if this whole process isn't for African-American kids, what's really the political underlying scheme here? Without being overly paranoid, I think it's pretty clear that the purpose of this is to create non-union schools. And then for every charter school that's created, and for every public school that's shut down, there are that many less unionized teachers and that less money going into Democratic coffers. I think it's not a coincidence that the same person who was mentioned as being the funder of charter schools from the, I forget what foundation, the Amway Foundation, is also the backer of Michigan's right to work law. So I think that's really what's the political driving force here, is a Republican vision of thousands of non-union schools and the, you know, really collapse of the teacher union movement, and with that, a lot of the financial backing of the Democratic Party and other progressive causes.
Thank you, caller.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that there are overlapping goals there. I mean, there's sort of the general privatization agenda that we see. You know, it's like the attack on the post office. You know, there's a desire to see tax money flow out of public institutions and into private hands, and there's a desire to unmake really the social contract and, you know, our group participation in society and making it a livable place for everybody, and institute a real kind of a harsh pay-as-you-go society that benefits the rich at the expense of the poor. And then there's also this political attack on unions, which is part of that. It's also... you know, it's just good for Republicans because unions give money to Democrats. And there's no doubt that that's part of the reason for this whole coordinated campaign.
You know, Milton Friedman, who is often touted as the ideological father of the voucher school movement, in as early as 1995, wrote an article in which he talked about the billions of dollars that were available in public schools that people should be going after. So there's, you know, and of course he's the Chicago Boys, Chicago school conservative economist, but he wrote this piece in 95 saying, yeah, you got it, all that untapped money that should be privatized, because after all, you know, Milton Friedman and his wife wrote that book called Freedom to Choose, which I often refer to as Freedom to Lose. You know, that which brings me back to another thought as you were talking before about school choice. I've pondered for a while now, why is it that the same people that oftentimes who talk about school choice are opposed to reproductive choice, to women's choice, right? They're pro school choice, but opposed to other forms of choice, the ideology of it all. 256-2001, let's continue on with our phones. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Hi, listen, I was wondering about our vocabulary and terminology. We refer to reform programs for schools, for budgets, for whatever, but really we're deforming them, perverting things that are for the social good. Couldn't we just change our vocabulary and not call them reform anymore? I'll hang up and listen on. Have a good one.
Well, I think that's a well-chosen word, reform, and the reason is it sounds good to people, right? So, I mean, I think you're right that we should recognize when these words are used to disguise an insidious agenda, and at the same time, I think if we, you know, are mindful of that, we have to talk about these programs as they're labeled in order to, you know, make it clear what we're talking about. So, yeah, I wouldn't call it reform, and I think it's important to explain what that really means.
Right. Well, I mean, reform, the whole discourse, historical discourse on reform movements, on reform, has this progressive connotation. But what's often missed is the fact that so much of reform historically has also had a top-down social control element to it. The right consciously takes on that language, as you just suggested, to mystify and to confuse folks, really. It's not reform in the progressive sense of moving forward. It's really a backward step.
I think we need to work on our own language so that we make clear what we mean, the threat is. And that's why I think privatization is an important thing to say. I think it's really about privatizing the schools. That's what we're talking about.
256-2001. The lines are lighting up, and you're welcome to get